You're about to hear a story that is absolutely staggering as we go down the UFO highway with Anthony Sanchez. Get ready for this. You may have not heard one of these before. We'll be back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Let me tell you a little bit about our guest now for the next couple hours. Anthony Sanchez became interested in UFOs back in 1989. At the time, Area 51 surfaced, as you might remember, as a public phenomenon. Since 2000, he has researched the subject matter thoroughly. He employs various techniques, hands-on approaches. He has compiled more than 20 years' worth of UFO-related research data. Each year, he's a regular visitor to the deserts of the American Southwest. He visits crash sites. He conducts interviews. Put together an incredible story here based on an interview with a Colonel X called UFO Highway, The Dulce Interview, Human Origins, The Harp, and Blue Beam Connection. And here he is on Coast to Coast. First-time guest, Anthony Sanchez. Anthony, how are you?
Fantastic. Thank you for having me, George.
Good. Looking forward to having you here as we talk about really this incredible story. Tell me a little bit more about you and your UFO research.
Well, it all started for me back around 1989. I was 19 at the time, very young, but very interested in that whole phenomena that was emerging out of Area 51, you know, especially, you know, the Bob Lazar interview that had emerged, the Popular Science publication of the Russian spy satellite photos. And since that time, you know, I've been hooked, you know, since the early 1990s, I've been hooked. In fact, one of my first VHS tapes was Area 51, Secrets of Dreamland by Norio Hayakawa. And I must have watched and analyzed that data over 100 times. So all of that early exposure is what led me to begin my catalog and archive of, you know, nearly two decades worth of data, which I still use and which I share with other researchers who work in the UFO field.
Yeah, I've spent the last week reading your book, UFO Highway, and it is an incredible book. I've got to tell you, you've done a great job with that. And let me ask you this, a couple things. You have somehow ruffled the feathers of some people in the UFO community, because I've never gotten more emails about someone in all my life. What happened?
You know, I have to tell you, there is a lot of heavy speculation over the validity of the colonel's DD-214, which is his military discharge document. However, I can tell you, George, that this document came directly from filing a standard Form 180, which I sent to the National Personnel Records Center and the Military Personnel Records Office in St. Louis, Missouri. That document was expedited under a request for a California multiple award schedule, which I had through my corporation at the time, and it was for the purpose of validating the military service of the colonel. I just find it absolutely incredulous that any UFO investigator out there would simply believe that by taking that document back to any governmental body or research institute, let alone a federally funded research institute, that they would expect to receive an answer validating the existence of a top-secret underground facility, let alone aliens or UFOs or any substantiation that any one individual, in particular a colonel, claims to have worked in such a facility. And that's what this is all about. You know, there's a clerical anomaly on the DD-214. But I can tell you that my source at the NPRC has told me.
Are you there?
And if you were to Google...
Where are you? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm there. Okay. I don't know what that was.
Are you? Let me ask you, are you on a speakerphone or a handheld?
I'm actually on a handheld. I'm on a landline.
Okay, all right.
Yep, sorry about that.
Okay.
You know, if you were to Google a DD-214, you would see thousands of examples of clerical errors, let alone, you know, these anomalies. So this is what the whole crux of this is about, you know, validating the existence of the colonel. I can tell you that he's real. And I can tell you that he exists, and this is a true story. This actually happened.
Okay, we're going to get into the stories, but I mean, you're at odds with them. They're at odds with you. I'm not mentioning who they are because, you know, I'm not going to go there. But
sure.
You know, they're questioning the authenticity of this story. You do say in the book that the colonel went through and passed two polygraph tests. Now, my producers wanted to get the polygraph examiner on the show, but they tell me that you've said he won't do it. Is that true?
Here's the reason why. Just recently, my house was broken into, and a half terabyte hard drive of all my research data was stolen. Now, I have a backup of that drive, but the identity of quite a few people that I worked with respect to the Dulce interview, they have been compromised. This person, at the time that I was approached by AFOSI from Bill Air Force Base, he was also approached, and they forcibly removed equipment from his person, not to mention the fact that he is a well-known photographer, in addition to being a private investigator and a former law enforcement officer.
Okay.
His wife is a prominent Chinese-American. She comes from a prominent Chinese-American family in San Francisco, and they have told me that if I bring any unwanted attention to them, that I was going to be seeing some sort of legal, you know, retribution. And I don't want that. He's a good friend of mine. I worked with him, and I really want to keep him out of this at this point.
Okay. You know, had he come on, it would have helped your case. You know that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
Now let's talk a little bit about the colonel. Who is the colonel, Colonel X? I know you're not going to tell me his name, but who is he?
You know, he is an educator. He works at a university. I can't say which university, obviously, but he holds two postgraduate degrees in psychology.
Okay, retired, and, I guess, right?
Yeah, he's retired, yep. And retired from the military. And he is part of this group that is essentially in hiding. They are AWOL from the military, or they are retired from the military and have become whistleblowers. He wanted to come, you know, out with the information that he has on this Dulce facility where he claims to have worked at.
And we've got pictures of a lot of underground facilities you provided for us. We got them over there at coasttocoastam.com right now. Mm-hmm. He says he worked at a underground facility, right?
In northern New Mexico.
Okay.
On the Jicarilla Apache Reservation right there in Dulce. And this all came about for him when he was stationed at McClellan Air Force Base in North Highlands, California, which is north of Sacramento. He was part of this classified medical detachment which responded to these Type X events. This is how we refer to them, Type X events. In 79, he'd been told to report to Edwards Air Force Base. There was an incident at a facility he had never heard of. It was called the Rio Arriba Scientific and Technological Underground Auxiliary, Dulce. He was going to be reporting to Dulce. He was given briefing documentation,
okay,
extensive amounts of documentation. And this is what led to his 3 years of working at that facility after this incident that had occurred there in 1979.
All right, tell us what this incident apparently was.
There was a breach at the Dulce facility by a scientific contingent who had discovered that grays who are there at the facility.
Alien grays.
Not alien grays. This is one of the big misconceptions. These are not aliens. These are grays that were created by some other group here on Earth.
Okay.
Yeah. So these grays essentially have been there for over 25,000 years. These grays were conducting some type of, you know, human abductions, and this scientific contingent had discovered that they breached the level of this facility that they were not supposed to, and it set off an engagement between the grays and the military there in the facility. A lot of people ended up dying. 22 people were unaccounted for.
Jeez.
And yeah, and there's a lot of mythology around this whole event. There's a lot of different versions of this story coming from a lot of different people. Now, this is what I find interesting, is that the colonel's story cross-correlates with various bits and pieces of data from other people that have emerged over the years with respect to Dulce. This is why I went to Dulce. This is why I was on top of the mesa. This is why I was meeting with families throughout the Jicarilla Apache Nation. I literally have embedded myself within the lives of these people, gaining their respect, gaining their trust, so that I can do my own personal validation of the data that I received from the colonel.
And they were basically, and they are, Native American Apache, right?
That's right. This is the Jicarilla Apache Nation.
Okay.
And they encompass the northern New Mexico area.
Now, the colonel, did he witness anything, or were these stories that were told to him while he was there?
The colonel arrived at a time when a demilitarized zone had been set up at Dulce. While he ended up, through circumstance, he ended up working at Dulce for this organization called DSD-3, which is sort of an intelligence, an on-site intelligence and security agency at the Dulce facility. Now, he ended up learning tons of information about the facility, the history of the Greys who are there, the history of the engagement, both positive and negative, between the Greys and the government, by, you know, going through this DSD-3, you know, database that they had there, where he had access, because of his clearance level, he had access to these archaeological tablets that had been electronically categorized and archived, personnel records. So he learned quite a bit about the facility and the facility's history. But one thing you must remember is on his way from Edwards Air Force Base over to Dulce, he had been given a set of briefing documents, and he held on to those documents. There was an oversight. He was supposed to have returned his set of these documents, and he never did. He actually kept them, and he only turned them in right before he left his position there at Dulce.
Okay, now let's go back to these Greys. You say they're not extraterrestrial, that they were created on this planet, probably genetically, right? I mean, were they living life forms, or were they like robots?
You know, they've been described as cybernetic organisms, right?
Or maybe a combination then.
Or a combination. Okay. I think more of a combination. What happened was...
And who created them, Anthony?
That's the interesting thing here. They are descendants of these progenitors. According to the Grey archaeological tablets, they were placed there by a progenitor race. This progenitor race today represents the modern-day Illuminati bloodlines. They created the Greys.
Humans? These progenitors were humans on this planet?
They were not humans originally. They were extraterrestrials originally.
Okay, all right. That's there.
Yep, over time, they had to interbreed with humans to continue living on this planet.
Would they be like the ETs that Zechariah Sitchin has always talked about prior to his passing?
In fact, the progenitors are descendants of the Anunnaki. Yes.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, So they created the Greys to serve them and to control the human slave populations, the earliest vestiges of humanity, which had also been genetically altered. Over time, as the progenitors began to interbreed with humans, the need for the Greys diminished. In fact, they became a threat to the progenitors, so they infected them with a virus, they relocated them, and they hoped that they would die off, but they didn't. And in 1938, the U.S. government had encountered them accidentally. In fact, there's a recorded event where the cavalry actually encountered them first, much earlier. But
and the Greys were violent?
The Greys were violent because they did not want to be discovered. They did not want to be interacted with. The 1938 Muroc expedition, this is a group of soldiers with various types of specializations out of Muroc Army Airfield. That's what it was called at the time. Today it's Edwards Air Force Base. When they happened upon this cavern on the mesa, on the Archuleta Mesa, they had found that there were signs of an engagement that had happened between Apache warriors and the Greys. There was actually dead bodies everywhere when they first initially entered the facility. There was technology that they had encountered, and there was rooms filled with these Grey archaeological tablets. These were metal sheets that had precision-like, writing on them. You know, these were tablets which held this advanced style of what closely resembled Akkadian cuneiform form.
Okay.
They were violent at first. At first, they were.
Now,
violent.
Didn't the colonel also talk about craft down there in this underground base?
Absolutely. The Greys have their own craft that they utilize for transport in and around the Four Corners area. So there are actually hangars that they have there that they themselves built. There's hangars that they themselves built, but which over time were retrofitted once the human contingent started working with the Greys there at Dulce.
So the technology must be extraordinary.
It's beyond anything we can imagine. It's beyond anything we can imagine. This is 25,000 years of a scientific contingent living in a subterranean habitat, doing nothing but continually enhancing their own genetic code and advancing their levels of technology.
Are they living there now, Anthony? Are they they're alive and they're there now?
They are there right now. Matter of fact, I'm also aware that there is a contingent of these same grays in Alice Springs in an underground facility called Pine Gap in Australia.
At any point, did the colonel express concern, fear for his safety, for other people because of this?
You know, that's a loaded question because...
All my questions are loaded, Anthony.
The colonel actually expressed a level of fear, not only for himself, but for a contingent of the Greys, which were called the Dissident Greys. These were Greys which were much younger than what are referred to as the lower-level Greys, because they don't espouse the same doctrine that the lower this Greys is.
Yeah, you're breaking up here.
The 1960s and 70s and 80s. And he felt for, he was concerned for their safety. And what most people don't know is that in the 1990s, AFOSI over at Kirtland Air Force Base, DSD-3 right there in Dulce, had been infiltrated by a group, an Illuminati-led group, which started enacting and propagating types of programs. We're talking about conventional weapons development, bioagent experimentation and analysis, genetic experimentation, all, utilizing my lab's type incidents.
I would assume, though, Anthony, that they're working in tandem with some facets of government, whether it's a black ops program or what, right?
Yes, they are indeed working with the government. As a matter of fact, the majority of the work that goes on there in Dulce is happening under the guise of the General Services Administration. For instance, they're working with various corporations, such as the Bechtel Corporation.
Now, do you remember the Hopi prophecy, where they talked about, over their 25,000-year legend, ant people who lived underground? These grays could be misconstrued. They look like they could be ants. Could they be one and the same?
I absolutely believe that the Hopi legend refers to the Greys there in Dulce. As a matter of fact, you're going to find this interesting. When I was in Taos, New Mexico recently, I had a conversation with Travis Walton. I had met with Travis Walton.
Yeah, know him well.
And one of the most striking things that I can tell you is that his book simply screams Dulce to me. As you probably know, the movie has a very different take from the events as he specifically recalls them.
Yeah.
But in his book, he describes how he was taken to a hangar in a mountain where humans were working with grays. Now, I don't know about you, but to me, that is a perfect description of Dulce.
Yeah,
it
might be there. Anthony, hold on. We're going to hit this break. I want to tell everybody about your website, which is connected to coasttocoastam.com. It's ufohighway.com, and we're talking about his work, UFO Highway, and a Colonel X. We can't get his name. He won't tell us that. The colonel does not want anyone to know who he is. And I do want to tell you that there's a group in the UFO community, a very well-established group that does not accept this story as fact at all. And I want you to know about that. And also our producers tried to get the polygraph examiner who apparently examined the colonel, who Anthony says passed twice, to come on the program. And Anthony tells us he will not come on. We do not have the number of the polygraph examiner. We'll be back with more with Anthony Sanchez on Coast to Coast AM. And our very special guest tonight, Anthony Sanchez, we talk about his work, UFO Highway. We'll come back to Anthony in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. We're also talking about this incredible area called Dulce, New Mexico, an underground base there. Now, Bill Burns, of course, who's my partner in several books, is also, of course, the creator of UFO Hunters that was on the History Channel and the publisher of UFO Magazine, and he's very familiar with that area, so much so that after they aired a segment of Dulce on the History Channel on the UFO Hunters, all of a sudden the show was gone. But here, let's go to Bill Burns here. Hey, Bill, good morning.
Hi, George. How are you? Good morning.
Good, good. What can you tell us about Dulce?
Well, Dulce is a fascinating place because the rumors about Dulce and the legends about Dulce are just rampant. On the one hand, one story has it, and we were there on top of the mesa. It is an underground facility of something like 7 levels built into the Archuleta Mesa on the Jicarilla Apache Reservation in Dulce, New Mexico. And supposedly, it's a research facility. It's a research facility where on the top levels, American scientists are doing research on alien material, including alien biology and physiology. As you go down into the lower levels, there are Earthling scientists, Terran scientists, our guys, and alien scientists doing work on all kinds of hybridization of humans and aliens. And at the very bottom levels, where human beings aren't allowed, it is only the aliens doing the research. And we interviewed John Lear, who the story of Dulce first came out many, many years ago when this person who was a security guard at Dulce called Thomas Castellano just broke away, left, ran away, and supposedly he took some photos. And he contacted various people, including members of the Jicarilla Apache tribe. Mm-hmm. And he was given a safe house by the Jicarilla Apache. I spoke to someone who actually gave him a safe house. And he left his photos in a secret location. John Lear, who is from Las Vegas, who's very famous because of the Bob Lazar case, saw the photos. And John Lear had sketches of the photos of human body parts floating in vats of some strange liquid, human beings in kind of beakers and test tubes, embryonic human beings in beakers and test tubes. And it really is a chilling place. And supposedly Dulce is fed by these underground tunnels dug by these huge nuclear power drilling machines, literally melt the rock as they go through. And supposedly there is an actual channel all the way from the from Santa Monica Bay, from the Redondo Trench, all the way through the mountains, under the mountains, into Dulce, New Mexico, as well as into Area 51. And so years ago, according to Ken Storch, who investigated it as well and was on UFO Hunters, there was actually a firefight between human beings and extraterrestrials underground.
And that could be what Anthony's been alluding to here.
Maybe. There was a number of American scientists who were killed, bodies were taken out, and this story was told to Ken Storch by a member of the Apache Tribal Police who said he was there when all this happened. Now, when we were there, we met Gabe Valdez, who was a retired New Mexico state trooper, whose theory was that there were no aliens at the base, but there were some terrible, terrible things going on underneath the Archuleta Mesa that the Apache themselves were victimized by. And of course, people have seen UFOs and all kinds of strange anomalies at the base, and there are some great stories. But in this particular case, Gabe Valdez showed us a number of some photos. And one of the photos, which came from the womb of a mutilated cow that a state trooper had come across in his car while seeing a black helicopter hovering over it, was a cow's body with a human head attached to it, clearly kind of a hybrid. Well, when we aired that photo on the show, and I got to tell you, getting a network to air that photo on the show was always a challenge. But they did for a brief period of time. Nobody could explain it. And after that, Senators Lindsey Graham and Chuck Grassley and Mitch McConnell, very famous Mitch McConnell, who's now the minority leader in the Senate, Mitch McConnell, all came forward and proposed an amendment to the federal to the federal criminal statutes, Title 18, which made it against the law to interbreed humans and animals. And we knew when they did that, we'd step on something really, really bigger than a toe.
Do you want to take a stab at who Colonel X might be, Anthony's Colonel X? Any idea?
I have no idea. The only Colonel X that I knew, believe it or not, was a Colonel X who contacted us all the way back in 2006, the end of 2006, and said there was a UFO hovering over Las Vegas. And he called himself Colonel X. And this was a cover of UFO magazine. And he sent us some photos of that, what he said was a reverse-engineered UFO over Las Vegas, the National Forest. And he sent us some photos, and we published these photos. Well, the first episode of UFO Hunters that never aired, by the way, it was deep sixed. We went out to the National Forest, to the house of to the home of Jim Sanders, by the way, from the downing of TWA flag.
Of course, yeah.
And we saw this huge light in the sky, literally over the forest. We went out to the forest, went to the very top of a mountain there, a plateau, with a huge lens, and this the same lens we used to photograph Area 51. And lo and behold, there it was, a platform. I've never seen anything like it in my life. A platform hovering in the sky. And this was all told to us by this person called Colonel X. And so when I texted Nancy back at the office, we found it. We found the UFO. Literally, as soon as I hit the send button on my BlackBerry, immediately, within seconds, the lights on the object flickered and it went down below the horizon.
Wow.
Well, weeks later, I spoke to Bill Scott, another guest, right?
Yeah.
Of Space Wars and Counterspace.
That's
I spoke
right.
to Bill Scott from Aviation Week, and Bill Scott said, hey, you guys just found an Echelon surveillance platform. Or he said a surveillance platform. Somebody else told me that it was Echelon. A surveillance platform hovering over Las Vegas, same kind of thing we have over downtown Baghdad. They were able to pick up every single text, every single voicemail, every single email.
Amazing.
From your cell phone and from a computer, and literally were able to spot your license plates when you guys left Jim Sanders' house.
Instant.
So that's the only Colonel X that I know.
Bill, that's a great story. And thanks for the perspective on Dulce. I appreciate it. Bill Burns, and say hi to Nancy for us. And we shall be back in a moment. The UFO Highway, here we come, with Anthony Sanchez on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, we're with Anthony Sanchez, his book, UFO Highway. Anthony, of the interview that you conducted with Colonel X, what do you think was the most shocking thing he told you?
You know, the fact that there's a bio-agent experimentation and analysis taking place there, right where this huge population, well, it's not a huge population, but it's a concentrated population of people. And they're using ricin and anthrax and newly developed experimental toxins, which essentially account for the high level of cattle mutilations that take place there in Dulce and the surrounding Four Corner areas. I know of one cattle ranch in particular, which was quite literally devastated after 100 years of being run by the same family. The losses that they incurred put them under, it drove them to sell their ranch or face bankruptcy. And they were almost facing homelessness because of the number of cattle that were mutilated. And it's actually quite a famous incident there. I just spoke with this one individual from the family, but, you know, again, he doesn't want to be named at this time. I mean, people in the UFO community know exactly what I'm talking about, but he just doesn't want to bring more attention to his family. And that's what really bugged me is that, you know, I met with Gabe Valdez and Dulce a year ago, and one of the things that he had mentioned to me was the fact that when they found these mutilated cattle, they were coming upon, you know, military-grade material like gas masks. They were finding these phosphorus materials on the mutilated cattle. And one of the things he said to me was that if I were to ever come upon a mutilated cattle, to never touch the remains of that cattle, to let the experts handle it.
Yeah.
And, you know, most people don't realize this, but right now, as I'm on the phone with you, the left side of my face and my shoulder is paralyzed.
Paralyzed? What happened to you?
Completely paralyzed. When I was up on the mesa, up atop the mesa, on the plateau, we had made a discovery. We found military-grade steel shipping containers for F-5 jet engines. Now, what the heck are those doing up in the middle of nowhere on the top of the mesa? We were up there. We found this stuff. Our guide, when we made the discovery, our guide started acting strangely. He became very frantic is the word I'd like to use, and he warned me at that point, do not put his face on the film that we were using, do not mention his name, and make sure that his truck was not seen on the film that we were...
He's petrified.
He was petrified. Later that evening, I had succumbed. I had become disoriented. Immense pain. I started to experience immense pain and fatigue. The next morning, there was an incident whereby I was served food at an establishment who no one can recall or recognize the person who served me when I described this person to them. This woman simply doesn't exist.
Were you poisoned?
I think I was. The next day, I had worsened, and by the third day, I was completely paralyzed on the left side of my face and shoulder area. Doctors initially thought that I had a stroke, but they ruled that out. Then they thought I had something called Bell's palsy, but it was just not consistent.
Where the muscles kind of go crazy,
that,
huh?
Yeah, there's a facial nerve there, but it wasn't consistent with the way that my paralysis came about, and my shoulder is affected. So they looked into me possibly being exposed to a commercial pesticide, and I apologize for my voice, but I keep having to slide my face up to the left so that I can talk. And that was positive. That returned positive, but the chemical signature did not match anything that they knew of. At this point, I still don't know what it is that's afflicting me. When I came back to California, they did a battery of blood tests, and you know, again, they're convinced that I've been exposed to something. Last night, I received a call from an Australian intelligence specialist. This is weird. I got a call all the way from Australia, and he told me.
Did he know you?
He knows of me.
Okay.
So he told me that I am exhibiting signs of having been given a nanofraction of tetrodontidae and curare, which is essentially a nanoconcoction of blowfish venom and a South American plant toxin.
Did they want you out of the picture?
He thinks so. He thinks so. In fact, he's actually warning me about releasing various pieces of information on an investigation that I'm conducting at the moment.
You mean beyond what you've written in UFO Highway?
Beyond. It's called Project Leonid, and it's related to Dulcie. But they're warning me to not release this information. And I'm getting a little bit nervous at this point.
Well, I guess so.
George, this is not a joke. People think that I'm making this up. They think that this is, you know, some type of a fantasy of mine. This is not a joke. People's lives are in danger. My life has already been compromised. My health has been compromised. I've been visited by spooks from real Air Force Base who have threatened me, and it's just getting kind of out of hand, and I am getting a little bit scared.
Do you think the colonel would ever tell you, okay, I want to go public, I want the world to know who I am?
Not without risking his life, but I think that's a possibility. I think there is a possibility for that. It could happen. It could happen. I'm not saying it won't happen. I'm saying it could happen.
All right, let's do a real quick review, Anthony, if we can, about what you think is going on underground at Dulce right now. What do you think is happening?
I know that there's conventional weapons development using plasma nuclear technologies. There's a connection to the Cabin Zone Wackenhut underground facility where I have, you know, this data that points to plasma weapons being developed over there as well. I already know that there's bioagent experimentation and analysis. That accounts for the high-level catamutilations. There's genetic experimentation, which accounts for the abductions of people in the area. And most recently, I discovered a company who was using a retrofitted 1960s-era underground nuclear storage facility at Mount Archuleta. Not the Mesa. This is Mount Archuleta, which is westward. George, this company is headed by a very powerful woman who was recently awarded a Commander of the Order of the British Empire by the Queen of England for her services to the nuclear and financial and banking service industry.
Sounds like an Illuminati deal.
This company recently adopted the Phoenix, a known Illuminati symbol, as their logo.
Interesting.
And what they do is they manufacture micronuclear reactors, exactly as described by the colonel, who says that these are great technology designs used to power Dulce. And this company, they make no bones about the fact that they plan to sell these micro-reactors to militaries around the world. Their website shows the plans for this. And that program is happening under the Technology Commercialization Office over at LENL. And if you didn't know this, Norio Hayakawa, a fellow researcher friend of mine, just sent me some information that there is a list of mega millionaires in the township of Los Alamos who work under the Technology Commercialization Office, as well as several other departments.
Huh, Norio's been on the program before.
Yes.
Good guy.
Yep. So that's what's going on at Dulce. You have conventional weapons development, bioagent experimentation and analysis, and genetic experimentation.
Well, is the colonel violating any top secret oath or anything like that?
You know, most people don't know this, but the reason why the colonel came forward with this information is because there are people who are innocently being abducted and utilized for these genetic experiments there. There's a Dr. Michael Sala even agrees that there is a potential human rights violation being committed there at Dulce. That's why the colonel came forward.
He's got several kids, right?
Yes, he does. They're all adult children now. They're all adults now.
Okay. How old is he? Can you tell me that?
You know, I don't remember his exact age, but he has to be
60-ish?
Yeah, around there, because he retired in 83 and went into the military at 18. I think that I don't remember the exact years, but I have it. I have it documented, but it's not something I retain in my head.
All right. In your book, UFO Highway, I want a lot of people to read it. They can make up their own minds. Where do you get it?
My book is available at my website, ufohighway.com, and currently I'm under a review process for a potential...
You self-published, okay.
Yeah, I self-published. Self-published. And the other thing, too, George, most people don't realize this, is I give my book away for free to people. You know, I my publicist is going to kill me for saying that, but I'm not in the business to make money. I'm not. That's not what I'm about.
What? Everybody is, Anthony.
But, you know, this week alone, I must have given 10 copies of my book away for free to people that are having financial difficulties.
Good for you.
My point is the data needs to get to the people. People need to understand what is occurring at Dulce. You know, with respect to Bill Burns' call, you know, the 1979 incident, that's one of the things I researched when I was most recently there in Dulce. One of the critical pieces of evidence that I came away with was how a friend of the host family that I was there with in Dulce, mm-hmm, had casually mentioned how his father had told him that while he was working at a facility for the Bureau of Indian Affairs back in 1979, that a quiet evacuation of the township was enacted. He said that it lasted for 2 days before they were allowed to return to work. And that lends evidence to the 1979 event. And one more other piece. And by the way, I'm giving this to you. Nobody else has received this information, so this is the first.
All right, great.
A veteran 10-year law enforcement officer in Dulce reported that her sister recalled how in 1979, at the same time as this other event, a man had run into a remote area of the township. He had come out from the river area near where County Road J2 meets the 139. The man frantically told her that he had just escaped from a facility in the Mesa, and he had warned of a highly electrified invisible fence, and he was frantic to leave the area.
Well, there's no doubt something's going on there for sure. Anthony, we're going to take phone calls with you when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.